folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. A Jay Bird. How
Steve,
she dangling,
what's happening?
How she bangling. 20. That's a ripping intro, Jay.
24. Thanks.
I used to learn Ramones cover songs, but I had records that skip, so it just like 20 for hours.
You just keep playing over and over, and you're like, okay, what happened here? It just doesn't sound right.
That's why we were the worst cover band on Cave Run. It was horrible. It was not a pretty scene, so, you know.
Okay.
Well, what's cooking at the Muskie Shop? What's the comings, the goings? I have... not checked. I've been out here in Canada being a moron with Monster Muskie Mike Lowe, the main man from Maine. Say hi, Mike.
Hey-o.
There you go. So he's on the he's on the grill tonight, baby. Anyway, what do you
super
know?
Duper.
Super
well,
duper.
You know, speaking of Muskie Shop, Steve, you know, finally got the first 8-9 combo bladed RJ lures in. Got the first colors of those. a little bit late, but he's having production problems. But yeah, we got those. That's a cool little bucktail. Oh man, we got it. We got so much stuff in Thursday and Friday. You wouldn't even believe it.
Anything just ripping.
Live action series in the Hellhounds. Those look really cool.
What's that?
You know, like the live fish.
Oh yeah,
bait,
like the super
photo kind of pattern. Yeah, those are neat. A ton of new clothing. Daiwa's got a new high-end braid out called X8 X Braid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the MM26 stuff. Those guys that were at the bash.
You're talking about
make those glide baits. Yeah.
Sick. Yeah. Oh, they're gliders.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. Those are in there.
Cool new stuff. Wow.
Very cool.
That's a lot of
Spanky Baits Blade Runner rods too. That's a new rod line.
I saw those. I saw them hanging out in the Tube Screamer's garage when I was poking around there, pre-release there. That's a cool little rod from the Spanky Bait Boys. You know, definitely a lot of opciones out there right now on the rods. So very cool. You know, it's unique that we get this much new stuff in
late in the season.
But hey. You know what? It's amazing that people are out there innovating, creating, and hopefully musketating.
Yeah, keep it coming. I love it.
I made that up. Trademark.
It sounds great.
Thank you very much. Anyway.
Copyrighted.
Copywrote. Anyway, it's been, I'll tell you, everybody wants to know. And if you not know, get in the game. Get in the game. If you don't know what's going on in Canada, you missed the Canadian Muskie Fishing Report with Steve, and Danny, and my other brother, Daryl. That's a new heart joke, Jay. Daryl.
It's my brother, Daryl, and my other brother, Daryl.
Don't age us. Anyway, so had the Herbex on. They're going to be lurking around. Hopefully, they're lurking around camp. Me and Monster Muskie Mike Lowe from Maine I'll dial the name in here shortly.
When you say lurking, define exactly what you mean by that.
Possum in
like
a trash
snooping?
Can. No.
Okay.
Lurking. Oh, okay. They're lurking like creepers, you know. They're looking in the windows. What bucktails is he making today?
Sure. Right?
It's private eyes are watching you. They're watching your every move, hauling oats. Anyway, so I catch a Herbeck out by my trash can, right? And we take a broom out. We shoo him. That's one of the.
And
few.
It's dark, so you don't know which one it is.
You don't know which one it is. They both look the same. One's old, one's young. So you take your broom out there and you're shooing a Herbeck. That's Canada for you, right? They hear you. If you're on a hot bite, maybe you got a bottle of Crown. They're gonna show up, right? And you got to get your. I call it my Canada broom, Jay. Okay.
The shooer.
It's on my list of things I take to Canada every year. It's my Herbeck shooer, right?
Right.
And they hiss back every time, right? They hiss back every time. But anyway, they're going to be around camp here shortly. They've been dialed in. Check it out. We did a fun little Canadian Muskie podcast as far as the show Danny's doing with Jamie and all that fun stuff. I filled in on that because we had some tech issues. So that's kind of the update. I'll tell you up here, though, it was absolute money honey yesterday. I've never seen a day that looked more cash money musky millionaire, right, in my life. And it paid. It was one of those things. I'll tell you, if you want to know, I was telling main musky Mike, we'll get there. I'm working on it. It's a work in progress. But I'm telling him, today you're going to see me fish like you don't expect me to fish, which is run and gun. And everything was there. And it was topwater, and it was bucktails, and it was money. And then it fell apart, and everybody's walking up the docks, kicking frickin' rocks, right? The next day, you go, yesterday's not today, today's not tomorrow. What is happening right now? And, you know, saying that, I figure we'll do some Q&A, but talk patterning, because here was the thing, right? Mike's been down with me. We fished in Tennessee before. We've done the grindhouse. We were laughing today. His ride or die. That's what they call the women folk now, more nowadays. Ride or die. You know, we went out, we grinded, and comes around. He's got this freaking fish up, pushing the 50 mark. Boom, it just smokes. It's like, you put the time in to get that smoke, sometimes in bad conditions. But when you see it clicking, it's time to go. And that's a rare thing you ever hear me say. It's freaking go time, where you've got to shift gears. But that's what everybody else is doing, right? And we were laughing today. We're like, everybody fishes like it looked yesterday year round, right?
Yeah.
And that's
right.
One thing
you're saying.
And so there's a time and a season, Jay, for everything. But I figured to gab about patterning a little bit here, which is like, obviously, when it looks like musky fishing and everything you've ever seen and every dream you've ever heard, or when you're setting the hook in your head and you're going, this is musky fishing, it happens, but it happens such a small percentage of the. He just cracked that can away from the microphone, which is a cardinal sin. This is how we open Pepsis on the show. Anyway, so you got to get the. But nonetheless, yeah, that was one moment in time. So as far as what we're hitting on the water here, for the last, I was grinding with Buck and Steve last week, hanging with Mike this week. All last week, I said, we just had more action in 4 hours than I had in 7 days, right? However, we caught Donkey Kongus last week. I think I sent you the picture, Jay. You know,
I've seen it. Yep.
And caught plenty of fish while everybody else is kicking rocks and going. So patterning, just some basic stuff here, ripping off the top of my head where I'm letting the Pepsis go down easy. Is first and foremost that read on the water. You know, talk about in a certain musky book, right? I talk about reading the water. And it is that innate read that you have to make when you step out there and you go, what I want is one thing, and what is most likely happening is another. And it's just reiterated. Every time I'm in camp, every time I'm up here acting like everybody else, you know, I'm up here just doing my thing, having a good time. I'm watching it. I'm seeing it. I'm hearing the clanging of bucktails and the rumble of topwaters at noon. I'm hearing the, you know what I'm saying? Where
they're gonna work,
they gotta work, they always work. It worked last year, it worked on, you know, grandpa's hog spot. Ugh, Jay,
that was the basis of my song today.
Grandpa's hog spot. But it was one of these deals where, you know, there's so many things that can be taking place, and what you want to implement as a game plan might not be the viable game plan. So how do we read the water? How do we pattern? First and foremost, 3-point bait check, right?
One.
Two. Three. Right?
Bingo.
So you've got to be looking for bait and making adjustments throughout the course of the day.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And again, it's back to what you want versus what the fish are doing, are often diametrically opposed. So we need to be looking at that. So how do we do that?
And you just said throughout the course of the day.
Throughout the course of the day.
Imperative. All. Exactly.
So today, high bright sun, just a light whippy breeze, right?
Mm-hmm. Here, yeah, you're right.
Got a text from another guide that I know that's up visiting as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Said, you seen anything? You know, it's like, you know, I'm up here for my pleasure, right? And sometimes you get away from home, water, and you go up for pleasure. And you feel like you really know something until you're somewhere else. And it was like, said, I feel like I could have caught one in the Walmart parking lot easier than on the lake. Right? Because it was just like, I think it was a case of the yesterdays, you know? Yesterday seemed so far away, but you have to make that read. So looking at the 3-point bait check, looking at what are the bait fish doing right now. And like you said, adjusting throughout the course of the day, where it's not a one and done pattern where we go, it's 6 a.m. and this is what is happening. And now we have a game plan until 9 o'clock at night. It is. What is that? I'm no math genius. I believe that's 15 hours, right? And Mike pointed out, we were discussing today, because he fishes a low-density area, fishes a habitat zone. It's funny. It's his first time in Canada hanging out with me, and he's going, this looks like where I fish. It's up north. It's pine trees. It's rock, all this stuff. And that mm-hmm. they recover quicker. So it went from grinding them out, big fish coming in, right, yep. getting low and slow, to turn around at sunset, right over the cabbage, right over like it was yesterday, but it was a speed, it was adjusting speed. We were building baits in the boat, augmenting baits. It happened in real time. We're going, we need a small blade that is going to hang. It's going to advance slowly because everything is sluggish opposed to forcing your wheel. And what I'm seeing in camp and what I see all the time, the forcing of will, one will bite, one will do it, and it rarely happens, right? So we're going to do the bait check. We're going to look at forage. We're going to pay attention to that, right? Secondly, when we're patterning, you're looking at your majors and your minors. The big fish of the day today, that was in the major, and it looked like crap, didn't it, Mike?
Oh, yeah, and we didn't get it to move until we slowed down.
Yeah. And that was it. And you're going, we're in the major. We're where they should be.
Yep.
Now we're playing with speed.
Yep.
Playing with speed, playing with different options where you would go, let's force it. No, the major is so important. And I'm not saying it always clicks, right? The majors don't even work. But that's a great time to focus your energy. We've said it before and we did it today and it paid huge dividends going, all right, we watched another boat go through the same spot. You pull in there, you pull, wait, give them a few minutes. You pull in, you go, okay, let's play with it. This looks right. It checks all the boxes. The bait fish are there. The wind, what little was there, is playing. We assume they're there, and now we're augmenting profile and speed because you have control of depth control and speed. And I think the killer in Canada, I think the killer in peak season is that folks feel that they're going to grind that one out hell or high water. And I'll tell you, these fish are just as persnickety as anywhere you fish. You know, they're still muskies where you're going yeah. to have to dial it in. Right. And I'm hearing it, and I'm hearing it from guides I know and buddies I know and friends I know up here going, they're not eating. I'm going, oh, they're eating. They're eating. They're eating all day long. However, you've got to freaking be where they're at and where they're going to eat now. So some basic of that. So playing with speed when things look good, let's say another augmentation, another game plan when it comes to patterning or trying to get a bite, if you, it's all the same, is hitting prime on a bad day when there is a change or a shift. And that becomes situational awareness, right? So we're going to be aware of where the majors are. We're going to be aware if there's a wind shift. We're going to be aware if a cloud runs in front of the sun and we got 5 minutes where the light might be dimmer. Work today.
Yep. We're great today.
Right? Oh, the yep. clouds are in front of the sun. Instead of casting and blasting, being situationally aware and going, what's the closest place I can get that's going to be probably good?
Yep. That low light.
Yeah, low light. And it's not like low light sunset. It's like, okay, and we make a little move, said it earlier, it's 4:30, it's suckitude time, roll into something. Okay, there's clouds coming over. That's enough of a change because it's been high, bright, sun, dead foot, come. Enough of a change that they might see the profile. The vibration's going to hit them. They might lock in. So it's constant augmentation. We modified some blades today, but we freaking knew you're grinding the slop. You're getting in there. There's not a lot of option. It was a game of augmenting your game plan throughout the course of the day, in and out of areas, and then hitting prime areas when there was a slight change. And it was the slightest of stuff. Like most people probably, I mean, you just don't notice it.
No, and it was a slow roll through the cabbage too.
Yeah, slow. You're sitting here, it's August, it's Canada. And I said it when I was doing the Canadian Muskie report with the Herbaxes. They're talking about burn. We're talking about slow roll, death roll.
Yeah, right. I heard that, yeah.
Just death rolling it through there, going, huh, root them out. It's kind of how, Jay, when we're doing Wisconsin, things go bad. Mm-hmm. It's always just my game plan. He's in there. He's coming. It's a freaking hostage situation. You're coming out one way or another. Coming out one way or another. And if you dare show me where you're at. So another thing, I guess, first patterning, and it's not like a master class thing or something like that, just some tips, because a lot of guys are on the water right now, or a lot of guys are gonna be on the water. When it's tough, move them and come back, but come back when it matters. We had, and Mike, I'll flip it over here. We had the one come up, the big one today, and it was like, came back the second the sun kind of changed and the light angle changes right back up. Wouldn't you say? What was kind of the scenario?
You know, Steve, so what happened, you know, we came into this and it looked killer at first. You know, we took a couple casts. We kind of tried to figure this out. And what we noticed was we had to slow down. I mean, you had to build two more bucktails just on the boat.
Yeah.
You know, and as you kind of figured that out, you were like, one was like, yup, this is a little too heavy. I need to slow this down and be able to keep that lift. And next thing you know, boom, we move her. You know, and it's kind of been that game plan all day today. You know, Steve, the more we looked at certain objects, the more we looked at certain areas, the more we realized we had to slow down. Yesterday was firing. You couldn't ask for anything better yesterday. Yeah. Yesterday is what dreams are made of, you know? And I mean, what do? Well, I put, what, a 46 or 47 on the boat. You know, we moved another fish. We caught a few pike.
5 eats.
Exactly. You know, the last couple of days, we're looking at almost 8 eats. You know, but we wouldn't have seen anything today if we didn't augment and we didn't slow down.
There you go. That's what we're swinging and singing. And again, I pound this point because, Jay, you've been there. We've done it where it's just like the same thing. Anywhere I go, anywhere I'm fishing. You know, how many times have we done it, Jay? No one else is catching. What do we do?
Yeah. Slow down.
Slow down.
What kind of spots are you working here? You have like two or three vastly different spots that you're attacking when you do notice a change, like today in the bad conditions, or are they close together? Is it one, you know, large area?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, you're dealing with shield legs here. It's big stuff. So when the change comes, I'm you're lingering on bad days, lingering near things that I know that have been productive in certain scenarios. So like, okay, you know, certain times it's like, okay, something, if they're on the rocks, okay, what knowing your water and paying attention, where's the closest rock complex to me right now? Right. Yep. What's the closest weed rock combo to me right now? Now that is I don't want to say mastery of the water, but you know, something to contemplate and something I've been talking about. I think it's a kind of a new thing on the podcast, but it's something I've never articulated or even in the book. Being on your body of water at any given moment and being able to clearly define three or four different areas that check the parameter. What's my closest deep water hump? What's my closest weed bed? What's my closest rock complex, right? What's my closest shelf or major break? From where I'm at right now, for there's a change, it looks good, it's a micro change or a small change, how do I get there, where do I need to be, right? And that sounds like, you know, if you're fishing small inland waters or small bodies of water, right, that might be one end of the lake to the other, right, or it might be a 10-minute run, but
cloud change,
because we did it today. Yeah. And it was like, I call them Simpsons clouds. You know, you watch The Simpsons, you know, and here's the big puffies rolling into town. You go, if there's enough to change the light, you can, if there, yeah, you know, yep, it can be enough.
It was a cloud and a little bit of wind change, pick up.
Whack. And when we say wind change, it wasn't like blowing. It was a riffle.
Yeah, dead calm to a little bit of breeze.
And then whack, there they are. So that's something, like I said, I've been working on that. And again, I didn't even said it to Mike or Jay. I kind of have been conceptualizing this. I'm finally ready to kind of unleash it on everybody. When I'm on the water now, I'm trying to think about that. That's my new thing. What's the closest weeds? What's the closest rocks? What's the closest maybe the point? I don't have a list yet. It's worth going, okay, what are the things closest to me that if I have a small change that I can get on, if I know what the pattern is? Because we all have a pattern. Like, that's what I'm thinking, patterns all day. So you'll be on, people will articulate it as neophyte as they're on weeds, okay? Are they on coontail? Are they on cabbage? Are they on lilies? Are they, what kind of weed are they on? So we need to define that, right? Because there's a differentiation there. But is it a weed rock combo? Do you know enough about the area? Is it a weed rock combo? The second thing, and I'll tell you, you asked the Mark question, Jay. Right now, and I'm not talking hunting Donkey Kong, any muskie is on weed, clay adjacent to deep water. And I'm talking, I figurated the world's dumbest 29-inch fish four casts in a row.
Yep.
I didn't want to catch it, but it came in like a flying monkey with its hair on fire four times. And after the first time, I gave up. The second time, I hate you.
Yep.
Right? And it was, but here's the smallest Dinkerstein of all times. It's more annoying than a northern. Come flying in, and he is staged on that clay, rock, weed combo adjacent to deep water. So it's not solely weeds. It is back to square one, or back to the root, which is structure matters more so than cover. So we go, what is the structural composition of the area I'm fishing? Okay, it is obviously a sloping topography that breaks off the deep water quickly. Right? Check that box. Now we need the addition of cabbage and rocks. I'm not finding fish on cabbage adjacent to deep water. It is cabbage and rocks, and the muskies are coming off the voids in the holes, and then you got to snake it through the cabbage. Yep. So they're on the rocks in the cabbage adjacent to deep water. And it's one after another, after another, after another, after another. Now, that is a game of observational skills. And I'll tell you, you go, how do you know that? How do you know that beyond a shadow of a doubt? Well, if I catch them, I'll pull my boat in and check out what's going on. You already caught him.
Right.
You caught him. Is there a rock in there? Is it not? And it's one right after another. How many? We're getting tighter, tighter, tighter. The hummingbird is the hummingbird, you know. it's there, it's taking the beating of the week. Yep. But that's what I'm starting to realize, is that obviously it's that hierarchy of structure. We all know that complexes matter, and as Doc Boy Randy said one time, Stephen Paul is a simple man fishing complex structure. But what I'm realizing is that combination, and now the mental game I'm playing is, where can I be when I need to be there quickly? Right?
Yep.
What's the adjacent thing for me when there's a micro change? Boom. What's the one thing I go, this checks the boxes? Because the rest of the time we have to be patterning, because we haven't been dialed in all day long. We went and fished coontail. We went and fished vast weed beds. We went and fished all this crap, rocks, blah, 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 blah.
It's tough when it all looks good.
Right. It all looks good.
Right.
when everything looks good, when everything looks like musky paradise, you know, and that's kind of the breakdown for me, which is I'm now starting to think, where am I and where can I be quickly? And that's how I'm scoring, which is weird. I never knew I was kind of doing it, and I now I'm more, that's my new task is, where am I now and where can I be quickly on a bad day, which is a mastery of structure, cover combinations, right? Yep. In cardinal directions.
And Steve, you see the results. We're moving fish on every new spot.
Every new
spot. Back into it. Yeah, we weren't there for 2 hours. As soon as we come back into that little change, boom.
Boom. Yeah. And I'm not trying to preach, but it was like worst of worst days, tiny change. And I'm talking 5 minutes of change and they start boogie woogieing. And that might, you know, you're fishing Spirit Lake in Iowa or you're fishing Pennsylvania, it's cruddy, or you're up in Maine with Mike. That might not work, but with Super Bowl couple months, it's Canada. You know, welcome to the big show. Thunder freaking dome. But you know what's your read on that, Jay? I kind of just dumped that in your lap because I've been riffing all day and kind of conceptualizing.
Yeah, all sounds good. I was curious what is you describe the weed cover there, you know, like it sounds like you can get baits over them fine.
No,
if there's some space, huh?
Snaking.
Not really
snaking.
Okay,
we're playing
space just enough
like some of it is just choked and the stuff I'm trying to hit is broadleaf. And I'll tell you, yeah, freaking, I've gotten scared. Like, we had a super big laugh yesterday where here I'm Mr. Keep Your Crap Together, right? I'll say, don't be looking a squirrel on the shoreline. I'm the first one to admit my flaws. And I go, throw over there in that slot. And I'm pulling up, because you can pull a bucktail one-handed, right? So I take my hand off the reel. And I go, try over the, bam, right? So I'm pulling it with one hand. I'm going to pick the reel back up. You know what I'm saying? I'm just kind of advancing it. And it has been, again, another thing that we've said before, but it bears saying again for these kind of bites. Look before you cast. And it's almost like a shooting thing. Look before you shoot. Right? Jay's on the ATF watch list. You got plenty of guns, Jay. What do they teach you when you get a gun? Look before you shoot, right?
Whatever.
So,
but so you guys got good weed lines. Are you visualizing?
No, we're not in the weeds. Okay, you can't. It's not a line.
When you're in the weed, you have pockets that you can get baits through?
No,
or?
No, sir. If you got a rock, you got a pocket, but the rest it is making a. Okay, let me ask you this, Jay. What's the longest cast you've ever seen me catch a muskie on? You know the answer to that. It's a short, not long.
Yeah.
It's a short game.
Yeah. It's all underhand
casting. All underhand casting. Yeah. Thicker than a snicker.
And technical.
If you can get technical and get that, if you can move that bait, because I was playing this game last week. With line counters, average cast was 90 feet. I'm underhand casting. Man, if that thing hits 40 feet, I'm a happy camper. Don't care.
Right, okay.
That's good enough. But you've done it with me, snaking through the weeds. You know, freaking, we'll call it the Pay Lake, right? Where with the Back Bay, where you smoked it on that little RJ's, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay, you know the upper side of that, how thick that is? That's what we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And you make a 40-foot cast, you might get it through it. You make a 100-foot cast, it's fouled every time, right?
Yep.
You make a 90-foot cast, so pitch.
And you're constantly directing that bucktail. You're keeping the rod tip up and working it, and it's just like, and you're making contact with weeds occasionally.
Trying not to, and just trying to work
When you do, you give it a little jolt, and sometimes that might be effective.
Yeah, and just kind of work it through there. So that's kind of what you're looking at. Okay. Yeah, you're just walking it through the thickest of the stuff, which is another thing I'll say is this. I'm on my Canadian high horse, right? Outside edges are for hot bites. The slop is for bad days. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's a video Book Daddy did years back where he goes on the boat. I believe he creates in the real time the slop master with the Colorado, I believe. One of the slop master baits, right? And I pulled up to that spot. I know it. I know where he's fishing. It's thicker than a snicker. I showed Maine Musky Mike that, and I said, look at this, and there you go. He's like, oh, there it is. And it is contending with the weed. So, like I said, the biggest advice I'd have is this. Good days are outside edge days for high bites, right? You could work the tube bite. You could do the edge bite. But when things cool off and they bury in the slop, you got to get in there and you got to float those baits, because we're talking about spinner baits, right? Love my meat grinders. Love my tailgaters. Sometimes it's a matter of lift, right? And we've been talking about this all day on the boat. So willow leaf blades, I've preached it, I've teached it. They run deep, right? They run deep, but they got a big thump. Well, that's not going to work in the super slop. You know, top water, they ain't going to come up and hit that, right? Where sometimes you got a freaking high rod angle those blades and you got to snake them through and you're going, all right, if I can make it around that weed, where am I going next? And it's paying attention to your casting, because if you just throw, you're going to end up on the top of the weed mat every time. And then it's frustrating, where it's more bass fishing worse than anything. You're picking pockets. We're picking pockets for Canadian muskies, and everybody else is crying poverty.
And it can't be too quick.
Can't be too quick. So how do you get slow, big thump, and something you can control that you know, I'll give up a secret. Here it is. Make you a bucktail with big blades and no weights.
Oof, oof, oof.
Wire and blades and a skirt.
Yep.
And we have dialed in so much where smaller skirts, things of that nature. And you can watch it because you're getting enough action. But where some of these scenarios you go, how do I get that probative where, you know, you're not going to be able to get that action? When we talked about whether it be a Titan, are you going to be able to get a Titan through that long enough? Maybe, but it's not the boom. You need
you need the thump
because they're ready to go, but the conditions are so bad they can't see.
Yes.
And you got to coax them up. So that's kind of the soapbox I've been on, Jay. I would tell you folks, like I said, your patterning, just grind it out, and then that augmentation, being absolutely willing. To play that head game is going to pay off for you. Where you go, what's the closest thing? If you're sitting on Lake Suckabagama, or you're down there in Slime Lander, right, and you're on your water, you go, where am I going to go if? And I think that's a powerful statement, right? Where am I going to go when? Where am I going to go if?
Have that plan in your pocket.
Have that plan in your pocket, Jay. You've got to be sick of hearing my ramblings by now. Anyway.
Well, Steve, you're on dark water, too. They call the goon dark water. Could you describe the water clarity, like how far down you can see?
Day to day, buddy. There's section of this
really?
Stuff. So on Eagle, they name it Western Arm, this arm, that arm, right? The mm-hmm. goon has some – they're river channels. They're not portage channels, but you can portage their arm, right? To Dionne Warwick – we call it, it's Denoric, but Dionne Warwick's way better. And some other section, this stuff that you can see down 10 feet. So it's not like, you know, mud bucket all the time. Oh, and it's
okay,
turbid.
Okay.
So this lake, believe it or not, is turbid. It is clay blown in by the wind, right, that's entering the water column, and it kind of hangs in the top part of the water column. So believe it or not, it's pretty dang clear down deep. So it's a interesting.
That's interesting.
Oh, both
sure.
sides. You'll
both
get
sides crazy.
Both sides crazy. You get woke up. We had Donkey Kong Jr. up, and I went, I think there's one. Ah, right. And you just go.
I've heard that sound before.
Oh yeah. when that thing's thicker than a snicker, it was like, you know, you say you could hit the side of the barn. The side of that fish looked like a barn. And it was came in, and you never saw it. And it's like 2 feet out. And you go, oh, you know, we're sitting there eye to eye. But anyway, Josh, first off, Thanks for everything you guys did with this. First thing, thanks for everything you guys did with the bash and the podcast. Fantastic. He's heading up to Canada. Could you possibly give a few pointers to get me started? Bait cars, types, any info? I think we just did. that'll cover you there. Oh, my goodness. Just cut myself off to sit, you know, spite my own face. Casey, love the podcast. Do a breakdown of any Iowa fisheries. Well, gonna have to spend some time there. I know who could do that, Jay. You know who could do a breakdown of Iowa fishing?
The Stewart brothers, maybe?
The Stewart brothers. That'd be a cool thing to talk about. Yeah. Iowa.
Never fished there.
Never fished there. That would be interesting because they're Iowa boys. They used to be,
they are.
They were originally in Slipknot, and then they came over to the Muskie Shop. So there you have it. Dale, good morning. I'll start by introducing myself. My name is Dale. That's it. That's all he wrote.
Hey, dude.
I'm teasing. Okay, this is a long one. He's from upstate New York, avid angler. Spend my summers on the St. Lawrence and have spent some time walleye fishing with a 31-inch PB. As far as a walleye, recently became obsessed with muskie and determined to catch one. I started listening to you guys about 3 weeks ago. And I'm somewhere around episode 33. I love every time someone cracks a Pepsi. Whoa, Freudian slip. Anyway, I'm going to paraphrase. Water Tim's. This is fine. I'm reading the whole thing here. Okay. Anyway, this guy scored. There's no question here. He's just appreciating anything. It was very funny. Muskie Main Mike was. We were discussing the St. Lawrence this morning over a bowl of cereal, and we were talking about it. And the St. Lawrence is such a different animal. That whole area. I'm actually going to crack a Pepsi. Jay, I'm not trying to hijack here, but it's funny. You've been up there. Talk about for a second here.
You know, Steve, personally, I haven't been up there. What I have heard from...
No, I'm wrong.
Yeah, you are wrong. But I have heard from a couple different guys up there that, you know, what it sets up, it's almost like the Niagara, right? So what you deal with, big, big, deep, deep water, it's vast. Right, so it's trying to find these fish in a haystack. Mm-hmm. There's no real, you know, it's not like you have bays where everything's grass, everything's money, everything looks great. What you're dealing with is big, deep shelves, or you're dealing with these really, really, you're getting nitpicky with channels. And from what I've heard, okay, I mean, either the bite's killer or you're going to waste way too much time trying to figure this out just to have something that's going to be a too deep of a water bite.
There you go. It is the mighty St. Lawrence. I think, you know, like I've said it before on the podcast, got to go there as a kid on a guided trip, and then you're going, I don't recognize this style, right? Maybe that's changed, but that's what you hear, and that's a secretive place of secrety big fish, and just keep grinding. Jay, Gary says, hello, Steve and Jay. What type of lures do you guys use swivels on your leader for? Topwater bucktails, does it matter? Or on other types of lures, do you run them on everything or nothing? As far as swivels, bucktails are pretty dang important to have a swivel on because the rotation thing. If you've ever trolled bucktails faster than a swivel can go, they'll lock up and they'll spin your line. So if you're bucktail fishing, a swivel is kind of important. Topwater, like rotating topwater, can be pretty good. I'm not big on, if I'm diving on glide baits with a swivel, I'm not big on like we were throwing, Jay, the Havana banana, right?
Okay.
You know, we're thunder on the water, boys. The Havana banana's back. But, you know, walk the dog. Jay, are you fishing a swivel on your cranks? What's your thought? I mean, because I want to defer to you a little bit for the river aspect with current. You're always in current. How does that play for your world?
I'm always using swivels on all my leader stuff now, and I'm just completely switched over to fluorocarbon, generally 130. You know, mm-hmm. once you pass the small bait springtime of the seasonality. So, I mean, I used to use some straight wire stuff for some gliders and stuff like that, you know, that had, you know, just a simple loop. That was years ago, and I've just gone to fluorocarbon, very happy with it.
Yeah, I'm with, you know, from the swivel standpoint, you know, I mean, that walk the dog, that straight stuff. I mean, I can't think of any bait where I'm like, I absolutely hate a swivel on it until I'm like doing a fixed ring glider kind of thing. There's been a lot of conversations over the years about, you know, hey, you know, are they going to crap out? Are they going to be this? Are they going to be that? I mean, you know, if like they call them crane swivels, I guess, at the Mosky shop, the big boys or whatever, they're not going to fail. It's back in the day, you would hear some stuff and you're under gun. I mean, these things are so freaking big. So I like, again, all you think, I mean, glide baits, I can live without them. Walk the dog, live without them. Krakens, you know, I mean, back in the day, I hated fishing a Suic with one, because once I got the, if you think about it, that swivel can kind of change your vector of force. Now everything's so dialed in, if you're fishing Titans, you ain't got to worry about it, you know, or if you're fishing Cranks and all this stuff, you ain't got to worry about it. Brian, can you guys do an episode on what you look for in a musky boat? Controls, rod stories, boat layout, boat stories, live and artificial, the pros and cons of the different types available. Anyway, yes, we can. We can't do a whole episode, but we'll do the question. I like the question. Jay, right? When you bought the SE yacht there for the fleet, right? Jay runs a 40-foot Hatteras on the Wisconsin River. Now, I mean, it's about where you fish, right? So the first thing is, where do I fish? Musky Mike, Maine for Musky Mike, whatever the hell his name is. You know, you're fishing rock jumpers and jet boats at times. You know, there's guys that guide out of Zodiacs. So where are we fishing? Realistically, right? Everybody wants the boat.
Everybody wants the big Ranger, but it's just not practical for certain bodies of water.
I don't want the big Ranger. You're freaking, you know, I'm not cool enough, baby.
I'm generalizing. That's what a lot of people aspire to, is that ultimate glass boat, you know. The flashy, expensive, you know. I got right. $120K into my boat. Oh, good for you.
$120K, that's chump change, baby. I'm teasing. Mm-hmm. No, it's one of those things where you go, is it, what's viable for my water? If, let's say I'm a dude and I'm fishing, I'm just, let me make it up places I know. I'm a West Virginia boy, right? I am. But let's say I fish West Virginia and you're fishing West Virginia waters and you're going to fish the reservoirs. You could get a 16-foot deep V tracker and you could whip butt for the rest of your life. All you need. You don't need a 250. You don't need a 150. You ain't going to see 4-footers, right? But on the other hand, if you're going to go fish Green Bay, you better have a real big boat. You ain't going to fish freaking, you're not going to fish St. Clair out of a John boat. Right. So what I look for about appropriate for the body of water I'm fishing, right? Cost effective. I've told people, and I'll say it right now, if I wasn't a guide, I would fish out of a freaking 16-foot piece of crap. Don't care. Right. The fish don't care. I spend more time cleaning my boat, worrying about my boat, putting it on the trailer, polishing my boats, than just knocking into stuff. So What am I looking for? Is it appropriate? Now, it comes to making a good musky boat. None of them are good, right? None of them. Yep. There's no musky boats. We tried. We got hit up. I've got, you know, some ridiculous stuff on mine, and you tweak everything and all this stuff. What you need, how many people are going to fish with regularly? If you're fishing by yourself, you don't need a boat over 16, right? If you're on big water, get you a deep V. Now, if you're fishing with a buddy, you could still get away with a Luminacraft or a Tracker deep V, and you could fish any reservoir. You could take it on the Bay of Green Bay when it's not rocking and rolling. You're never going on St. Clair unless it's like perfect. And other than that, you can go anywhere. I've been on Eagle Lake in Canada. My buddy Tim, the Euro giant, mm-hmm. right? He's got a 16-foot Lund Impact. That's it. We rocked on Eagle. We've been in some nasty stuff in it. That's plenty. We had a great time. We didn't get our butts kicked. The trick with the boat for me when it comes to musky fishing is the hull going to handle the water I'm handling, right? You don't want a flat-bottom bass tracker if you're fishing big chop, right? And I'll say this, personal opinion, fiberglass boats are problematic. If budget is an issue for you, fiberglass repairs are nightmarish. Joe Schmo that does meth down at the junkyard can probably weld aluminum, right, if you give him a bottle of Gatorade to make shake meth in, and he can fix the hole you put in it. But fiberglass repairs, the second you have a gas tank issue and they have to pull the freaking, I don't know if you guys realize this, fiberglass boats are in two parts where they rivet the guys together, a top and a bottom, and underneath that is your gas tank. And the second you have a transom problem or a gas tank problem and you have to take it to the dealership where they take all your crap off, they pull the rub rail, they pop all the rivets, and they separate that boat in two points, your bill is going to freaking be five figures. Right? So if you're rolling deep, right, you got all the money in the world, get your big glass boat. And if you want to be budget conscious, there's so many really good, that mid-size 16, 17, 18.
17-foot tracker deep.
Yeah, deep Vs, cheap Lunds. That's going to get you where you need to be. Jay, talk about a great river rig for small rivers.
Okay. Well, depends on if it's skinny water. You're talking about West Virginia type stuff.
No, I'm talking.
It's
just like the guys saying, with like, the. I'm saying on average,
know, with the jet drive and stuff like that. On average,
no, I'm saying 14,
16-foot boat, something light. You can haul around. It's got to be aluminum, so you can bang it around. You know, you're going to be hitting sand and stuff like that and gravel. So, you know, little four-stroke motor and rig a good trolling motor.
Yeah,
with plenty of power and extra batteries and. There you go.
I mean, for me, like, well, with the river rigs, and you know, you can get. I've told a lot of dudes this, and maybe Brian's budget's through the roof. It does. Tackle storage is always going to suck, right? Until you got customized stuff, it's going to suck, dude. The best thing I've ever seen for a John boat is a milk crate with gutters in it, or a 5-gallon bucket, and be done, right? And then when you move up, you get you a semi-deep V or a deep V. And if you, I mean, a 60-horse four-stroke on a 16-foot deep V with a 32-pound thrust trolling motor will rip your brain. You can do anything you want. Where, you know, if you move up to the 18, and what I can tell you is this. When you get up to 20-foot boats, and you get up to, right now, as a guy that has, well, I'm like 21 overall length. I have 9 batteries. I have 4 screens. I've got all the headaches that come with that. And I remember and I envy the days where I had simple, right? So the bigger the boat you get, is fuel consumption. So as far as musky fishing, there's no ultimate boat. So if you're fishing reservoirs, you're fishing inland lakes in Wisconsin, 16 to 18 foot deep V, plenty. Plenty. I just can't tell anybody or somebody that's looking at a boat, I can't advocate dropping the cash on a fiberglass boat, because the things that happen with age is your gel coat cracks. That's expensive. Gas fuel problems. That's expensive. If you can't get a wire through the thing and your transducer connection gets hooked up, it's expensive. Retain water. Once your transom's gone, throw her in the dump. They're heavy.
Well, they're heavy too.
Literally you just said.
They're so heavy, the wear and tear on the vehicle too.
That's the thing. You better have an F-250 if you get a 24-footer. I mean, it's the weight overall. And again, we've joked about Rangers. More power to you. You're living the dream. That's fine. I do not have F-250, you know, 8,000-pound boat money, right? I just simply don't. And it's just impossible for that at this point where
I mean, like the smaller the boat, the lighter it is, the better. That's how you learn boat control.
Well, there you go. Really boat control. That, that's the thing. You have good boat control. And like, I think the key to a musky boat is the biggest trolling motor you can fit on the bastard. That's it. The rest of it, forget it. I made a living out of a tracker for way longer than any of you ever believe it. And rocked it and had a great time. Tackle storages are going to be bad. That's why we make telescoping rods, right?
Yeah, right.
As far as configuration, we're kind of trying to get on in the tip. Okay, I'm a console driver. You go, why are you a console driver? I have always felt like a couple things here. Dangerous statements. When it comes to a tiller, right? You're setting dead center mass of the boat. You have to take up one side for your electronics, right? And we have lost all back casting deck. I'm not going to buy a boat that I'm driving that I have to stand on a 12-inch sidewall, and that's why I get to stand on all day long.
Or 6 to 8 inch, like some boats I've been.
Right. Now,
that's flat out dangerous.
Dangerous. You've seen, Jay, we've been in boats where people lose footing, right? So mm-hmm. If I'm back there, I want to be comfortable. Now, I had a conversation about tillers earlier this week with somebody. And they've gotten expensive. I said, because everybody's like, the guides want tillers. Well, the guides wanted tillers because they were the cheapest option back in the day. Now they're expensive because you're paying the price because you got to get power steering. You got to get this. You got to get that. Whereas if I buy a boat and I'm not a professional guide, I sure as hell want the most casting space I can get, right? And standing on this little rail, I got feet like a clown, Jay. Like a clown, right? Put on the red shoes, put the nose on, I'll sell you a cheeseburger and a Happy Meal, right? I ain't standing on the frickin' rail of a Tuffy in the back next to my hummingbirds in the corner that I paid a bunch of money for to stand in 20 inches of space and worry about falling out of the boat. So that's number one. So I don't like tillers for that reason. You can deck them out with tackle boxes, you can do all this, but he's acting flat out. So tillers, you're eating up your back deck. Where's the best place to fish from a musky boat? The back. Lowest to the water, best figure eight, best you're clear of the trolling motor and the obstructions, right? Clear
true.
That out.
Right.
Okay, check. Followed by center console. That's another hell fest. We can't even, unless you say something really Bostonian.
Say Duncan's.
It was this easy. The guy told me at the dock, he goes, hey, you caught any fish today? I go, hey, you like apples? I go, well, I caught a 46. How do you like them apples?
Apples.
Anyway, sorry. He's the musky Matt Damon. You can probably barely Matt hear Damon. It. He's down that Duncan. The Duncan. Anyway.
Wicked smart.
Wicked. Hold on, say wicked.
Hey, we've been catching wicked fish, guy.
Wicked.
Anyway, so. Anyway. Center consoles. They're cool. They look cool. You get to stand up while the bugs hit you in the face. You don't get to sit down. That's lame.
It's fishability, really.
It's
down to.
What?
Fishability. How much space do you have?
How much space? It's and great. I'm not knocking if you got a center console or a tiller or whatever. If I bought a boat and I am a as a guide or just a fisherman, I want to be able to have as much deck space as possible because I drive way less than I fish, yeah. Right? So a console takes up, three and a half feet, 4 feet of my butt. I haven't measured it, but, I sat down my little seat. I got my console. I'm out of the way. Nothing sticks up in the middle. And I take up this little area in the side opposed to the engine in the middle. After eating up the entire back. I don't have side rails. I don't have a back casting platform, right? So that's my thought is, like, what's the logistics of my layout?
And like clockwork, back of the boat works. I mean, I
still, back of the boat works.
I mean, I caught two yesterday.
Yeah.
For being in the back of the boat.
Yeah, back of the boat. Doesn't matter. And so those are kind of my thoughts. I mean, bait storage, like you said, live bait. I'm not big. I like talking about boats. We've been talking about boats. Jay talks about. When I fish live bait, I use an Engel portable cooler from the Muskie Shop. That's so much better than filling my live well and worried about freezing the pipes. Because when we're fishing live bait, Jay, when is, what is it? It's cold, right?
Generally.
What's going on with those coolers there for a second? I got to take a swiggy swig swig.
What's going on with those coolers?
Well, explain them for people who haven't seen them.
Engel coolers? I don't know. Decent coolers. I got one for my boat. I don't know, 20 quart or something like that. 13 quart. They got some huge ones that have, I mean, it's just got, you know, sucker live storage written all over it. So they're not ridiculous. You know, like those big Yetis, the price on those things, price them out for fun if you want a sticker shock sometime. The Engel stuff's good. You know, it's solid. It's tough.
Well, explain. Got
2 years on mine, so.
Well, you've had it longer than me. Explain the live well aspect of it, though, because doesn't it have a pump or something. What's going on there?
Yeah, the bait models, the big ones. Yeah, they come with pumps. So you know, you got live aeration in there, and you know, bait filtration net thing, little scoop thing. If you're running minnows, but for suckers, it'd just be ideal because they got the built-in. You don't have to worry about trying to find one that's going to fit. And, you know, attach it to the outside, you know, the little aerator bubble type deal. So
that's
key. I mean, it's just got to be insulated well. So when that sucker goes in there, you know, it's instantly acclimated because you're using water straight from that well temperature water that we keep our suckers in. So, you know, you want it to hold true and you want some aeration in there.
Yeah,
so
that's the
done deal. Real simple for under $100.
The last time I used the actual live well in a boat for suckers, put them in there, got not from Muskie Shop, but this is years and years and years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put shop water in there. They gave me the 5 gallon bucket of it, right? Put the fish in there and they're dead before I got there. And I went, wonder what that could have been. I thought about it and I was about to check them out and I saw film on the top, like almost like you'd see, you know, you're about 14 Pepsis in, you're trying to gas the boat, and you're just hosing the lake with a jerry can, right? Jeez. You see that rainbow in the water? I go, I bet you, since the last time this has been used, I've had 14 cans of bug spray, 15 cans of sunscreen, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, I see
everybody's
what you're saying.
Think about it realistically. Everybody's live well turns into storage, and then it comes fall. Unless you want to get out there and bleach the thing, and then sanitize the thing, and then clean the thing out. A portable.
You put that poor sucker in there, and he got bird flu in 10 minutes.
He got the bird flu. Right? He was hanging out with Jay the last couple weeks. He got the freaking bird flu. Frickin', how's your phlegm level, Jay, on a scale of 1 to 10? Where's your phlegm? And describe your phlegm with a collar chart from Home Depot.
Phlegm?
Yeah.
Yeah, phlegm's history. I got my energy back late last week, so fantastic. Thank you very much.
Anyway, we have rambled. We have barked. We have
rambled
sharked.
On, Steve.
Rambled on. Anyway, there's a delicious pork loin waiting, right?
You got it rough up there, man. I am telling you right now, rough.
It's rough.
Tough job.
Fish all day, wonderful food. Plus, you got Magic Mike from Maine there.
Magic Mike. He just can't. Magic Muskie Mike, whatever it takes here. Right. We'll close it out for the most Bostonian thing we can come up with. Tell us about the Patriots dynasty.
I don't know how else to say this. But I'm going to let you
Brady's
know right now.
Brady's the man.
Brady's the man.
Jay, you know, I'm a Rodgers fan. I am. But I'm going to let you know right now, Tommy touchdowns was the best thing that ever happened to the NFL.
All right, Jay Bersay, good night.
No, I agree on that. I mean, he's the man.
Later.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
Night.